Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you. We hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you. Today's reflection will actually form a lot of the soil for which we're going to go over the next 6 weeks total, because it'll sort of form a nature for the conversation that we're going to have. So if you look around and you see somebody who's important to you and you want them to be able to understand next week's sermon, the week after that, I think it would be important for them to point them back to the podcast that we do, and they can be able to listen to today's sermon, sort of get an idea of the context of how we understand this, because it's going to be part of an ongoing discussion. You may have looked at the title and said to yourself, silo thinking. What on earth is that? What on earth is silo thinking? The term comes to us out of the business production world, out of the workaday world, where it's this idea of the fact that either an individual or perhaps a unit of a company, a production line of a company, gets this idea that they're the most important element of that company. The company lives or dies based upon this one production line, and everything else is secondary to that. And the management journals always suggest that management leaders need to focus on getting people to understand that silo thinking can be destructive in its own way. Now, you can think about silo thinking as a small group of people, like a production line. You can think of it as a church, as maybe a focus on a ministry outlook. Not at Stratmore Hills, but the church that I was at before Stratmore Hills in Colorado Springs, there was tension in the congregation. God forbid, there's tension in the church. There was tension inside the congregation, and there was tension between the United Methodist women and the pastor of that church. And so consequently, they got to have this attitude within the United Methodist women that the United Methodist women at this particular church could survive and could be a functional, viable organization in spite of the poor health of the overall health of the church. Okay? Now, I reject that. I categorically reject that idea. But they seemed to embrace that idea for a number of years, and it seemed to be sort of a defining ethos of that particular church. And I would say to you that sometimes you may experience that in churches like maybe even a Hilltop, where you could get somebody who might say to you, well, this ministry is secondary, but the most important ministry at Hilltop is fill in the blank. Okay? And I would suggest to you that when we're guilty of that, we're guilty of silo thinking. We're perceiving that a particular ministry is the most important for God in the world. And I would say to you that the entire body needs to be built up, and the entire body needs to be supported in some kind of way. Now, some have different effects on the overall organization, but many ministries that we do are all related, they're all tied together, they're all integrated. Now, when I teach a Bible class, I often will go to a whiteboard and I'll write down faith and works. I'll write faith at one end of the spectrum and works at the other end of the spectrum. And when I do that, I'm reminding people, for example, that my history, I was raised Baptist. And within the Baptist community, their focus is very, very, very much on faith. Faith is what sets you free. And I'm not remotely suggesting the Baptists don't care how you lead your life, but it's secondary to faith. Faith is primary. Now, you get the other end of the spectrum, and I'm going to use Catholics and Latter-day Saints. You get the other end of the spectrum where faith is important. I'm not saying it's irrelevant, but action, doing things, are important. So you have this continuum of faith to works. And what I often do when I'm teaching that class, I'll draw sort of Methodism as in the center of that. We're sort of stuck, and I think in a positive way, stuck. Okay, in the middle, I just did 5 weeks on getting stuck. I think sometimes you can get stuck in bad. I think sometimes getting stuck is good. Okay, but Methodists, I think, are sort of in the middle there. We're sort of this place of where if you're a person of faith, there should be some demonstrable fruitfulness from that. Does that make sense? See where I'm carrying that? Now, I use that as an illustration for you to help us understand that I think individual and community operates the same way. The idea of focusing on individualism is important. It's an element of our journey. But at the same time, you can get over focused on that. At the other end, you can get so focused on community, you submerge all of your needs into the needs of the body. Okay. Now, I will suggest to you that on the distribution, it's probably more frequent that we have people that are gravitating towards the individual element than gravitate towards the community side. But both of them are a little out of whack, a little out of whack. Now, the dilemma I think we've got in this 21st century is the fact that we've gotten to a place where on this continuum, this continuum of community versus individual, we've gotten to a place where individualism has run amok. We've gotten to a place where individualism has become the most important element of how we define ourselves. As 20 years ago, in 1995, the Wall Street Journal had an editorial which talked about extreme individualism. Now, I don't know about you, but my guess is that where we are today in 2015, 20 years later, that we're further along that continuum of moving towards the individual than we were in 1995. Mary Jean's nodding her head. Now, I do not want to suggest remotely that Ayn Rand is all by herself totally responsible for this. Chuckle. Okay? First thing is, Ayn Rand died in the 1980s, so it's hard for her to have been all by herself responsible for that. But you know, would it surprise you Ayn Rand, for those of you who don't know, was the author of, in the 1940s, of a book called The Fountainhead. And she was author of a book in the early 1950s called Atlas Shrugged. The famous line from Atlas Shrugged is, "Who is John Galt?" Very good, Alan. Very good. Alan Sandy. There we go. Who is John Galt? All right. And she creates this straw man that she then starts to hack apart, which is the fact that everything in the world is all about the individual. She gets to this place where it's a borderline worship of the individual. Now, that wouldn't have been bad if sort of the orientation around following Ayn Rand had sort of died out when she died in the early 1980s. Unfortunately, she sold 1 million books last year. 1 million books. Now, actually, she didn't sell 1 million books. She's dead, okay? But the people who have her estate sold 1 million books last year. And there's a conversation, you'll hear it when I get back to this issue of looking at purple, red, Republicans, blue, Democrats, purple, combination of the two. We'll get there. But her writings continue to influence the dialogue and the conversation that we're having in our country. And her writings focus so much on this scale of community to individual that we keep gravitating down towards this individual end of the continuum. And we find ourselves there. And I think it's problematic. I think it's extremely problematic of where it carries it. Now, let me emphasize to you here, I'm not advocating we abolish the Bill of Rights, okay? For all of you that are out there that are concerned about that, the Bill of Rights is good. I like the Bill of Rights, okay? On the other hand, we can get a little carried away and keep focusing on individual, individual, individual. I lived in Colorado Springs, all right? And if you are not familiar with the politics in Colorado Springs, take Utah and put it on steroids, okay? It is very Bill of Rights, Federalist Papers, Hamilton, Madison, that whole conversation. It's very oriented around that. Focusing on the individual, though, is not odd. It's not odd. David Foster Wallace reminds us that he says, he's using my, everything in my own immediate experience supports my deep belief that I am the absolute center of the universe, the realest, most vivid, and important person in existence. That's accurate. That is 100% accurate. That everything that we see and or experience in our lives is filtered through our eyes. It's filtered through our experiences. When I leave this church, the center of the universe leaves 985 East, 10,600 South, and it goes to 2080 East Gar Falcon Lane. And my guess is when you leave, insert your address. The center of the universe leaves, and you go with it. The center of the universe has shifted to where you are. That is the natural default setting that all of us has. Now, the dilemma we have is getting stuck here in a bad way, getting stuck in that default setting. We can get stuck in that default setting, and so every time we have an experience, we can focus on me, me, me. I've used it, I think, with the kids here one day for a children's time in Finding Nemo. What did the seagulls keep focusing on as the food was distributed at the end of Finding Nemo? Mine, 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 mine. Does that thing ring a bell, anybody? Okay. That piece of music we sang right before I started, the Spirit of the Living God. Who am I to debate with the United Methodist hymnal? But if you sang it the way it is in the hymnal, it's fall afresh on me. Fall afresh on me. Melt me. Mold me. Use me. Nothing wrong with that. But my concern with that is the fact that it focuses on the individual, as opposed to reminding us that we're us. The pronoun is important. The pronoun is relevant for us. So that's the capital T truth I want you to take from that. Now, the dilemma I've got with the title, Susan Dunlap is taking her daughter to the airport today. Can you believe that? Susan Dunlap is taking her daughter to the airport, and she's the one who got me out here on this limb called, What Would Jesus Say About? She got me out there, and then she abandoned me. The dilemma you got with what would Jesus say about is sometimes Jesus doesn't necessarily have red-letter words that will communicate what Jesus would actually say about a particular topic. Rather, what we have is what the early church had to say about their understanding of who Jesus was. That passage that we just read to you from Acts, that Mike read so well to us from Acts, is about this post-Easter, post-Pentecost church. And I know there are some people out there that heard that and read there and says, socialists, communists. I'm sure at least one person had that go through their head, right? I'm not suggesting that we need to enter into a Animal Farm, George Orwell, all pigs are equal, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others kind of thing, okay? If I can explain over coffee, Orwell and Animal Farm, you want me to? Okay. But you can have this Orwellian viewpoint, and you can sit there and listen to what the church had to say about itself within the first year after Jesus has left, but it's very community-oriented. We can say what we want to about it, but it's very community-oriented. Jesus himself would offer observations that it's blessed to give up yourself for someone else. I think I've read that somewhere. So you have this Jesus himself talking, and you have the community that surrounded Jesus talking and giving us some idea of what it is that Jesus would say, what he would say about something. At the end of the service today, though, we're going to do something. We're going to, after I pronounce the benediction, we're going to all stand up. We're going to be already standing. And we're going to cluster together. We're going to reach over. We're going to put arm in arm. And we're going to sing, "Blessed be the tie that binds." We're going to say something about the fact that binding us together is good. The word religion itself, if you probably hear the word religion, ligament. What ligaments function in our body? They bind the bones together. Is that right, Nancy? Okay, she's nodding her head reluctantly. I'm sure I'll get over coffee, I'll have explained to me the way I've gone wrong with her. Having a doctor, multiple doctors in your presence here, sort of makes your medical illustrations a little more complicated. Religion is what binds us together. Jesus would say that when more than one is gathered, Jesus is present. But the same unit, the same past, the same area of Matthew, he would remind us that we get to know who God is in community. One of my a conservative writer named Dennis Prager, when I was working through my Christian formation, trying to figure out what I was going to do and what I was going to be when I grew up at age 42, wrote this book called Seven Things Everyone Needs to Know About Judaism. And the book is a powerful testimony to religiosity, not just Judaism, religiosity in general, which is the fact that by yourself, you can come to a conclusion that almost anything is true. And it's the beauty of being part of a faith community is that the faith community is empowered. Jesus empowers, red letter words in the Bible empower you to challenge people's viewpoints. In community, you were taken to a common place, and we would pray that's a positive common place. D.L. Moody was visiting a prominent Chicago citizen. He's a church organizer in the late 18th century, early 19th century, when the idea of church membership and involvement came up. And this gentleman said to him, "I believe I can be just as good a Christian outside the church as I can be inside it." Anybody ever heard anybody say that? Okay, all right. I've heard it in my own family once or twice. The man said, Moody said nothing and said he moved to the fireplace, blazing against the winter outside. He removed one burning coal from it and placed it on the hearth. And he sat there and watched it as that burning ember began to die out. And the gentleman said, I think I got it. I understand. Here's the capital T truth that I want you to take from today. The capital T truth for today is the fact that I'd like to remind us all that individualism can be important, and it should be important, and we get to know God individually. But we also are nourished, we're supported, we are cared for within community. Now, Jesus would often talk to his community and he would say things in forms of blessed are. He might say things like, you have heard it said, but. Or he would give a parable. That's often three very common ways that Jesus would express himself. And I would say what Jesus would say about this idea of silo thinking is, blessed are those who are willing to offer themselves for the community. Blessed are those who are willing to offer themselves for the community for the purposes of building it up and being fruitful and creating fruit in God's world. You might... I don't know exactly how you may have heard this, because I'm not sure Jesus would have ever said this, but people may sit there and say Jesus focuses very much on the individual. And I would agree to some extent he focuses on personal salvation. Got it? But Jesus, I would say to you, would say, you have heard it said, but, that's throughout Matthew, Matthew 6, Matthew 7, it's there all over. You have heard it said, but I say unto you, you have heard it said that the individual is supreme, that the doctrine of Ayn Rand, that everything is about you. You are the center of your universe. But I say unto you that my life, my red letter life, my Jesus life, my cross, Easter, Pentecost life is about community, about giving myself up for the community. Amen. Now, the last thing, though, is that I don't have to create a parable that Jesus would have told. I can actually read one. Luke 12, verses 13 through 21 is the parable of the rich fool. It's where this, and literally, he's making silos. It doesn't say silos in Greek there, but you could interpret it. But he's had a good harvest. Good things have happened to him. Had a wonderful harvest. And so what is he going to do? He's going to knock down the existing silos he has so he can build some more silos. Why? So he can continue to hoard all that he has. And God harvests him and calls him a fool because he's been so focused on himself. The kingdom of God is about sharing. The kingdom of God is about reminding ourselves that we're not really all by ourselves in this world. The United Church of Canada has a fantastic confession that's in our hymnal. You hear me say it sometimes. We are not alone. We live in God's world. But it's also the celebration of this body. I can't tell you the number of testimonials that I have of people that have lost a loved one, experienced health issues, have had some kind of crisis in their life, and they come up and they say, the only way I got through this was through the church. The church sustained me, nurtured me, and cared for me during this time away. What would Jesus say about silo thinking? I believe that Jesus would say that silo thinking is an example of where we think only about ourselves, only a small group of us, and that Jesus would reject the idea of silo thinking.
Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you. We hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you.